From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, advocates argue the state needs to offer extended voting. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on the continuing corruption trials of Sheldon Silver and Dean Skelos. And Senator Gillibrand and Congressman Tonko push legislation to enhance job training. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. At a hearing this week held by the State Assembly on expanded voting, advocates argued that New York needs to join more than half of the other states who offer some kind of extended voting. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
New York State has among the lowest voter turnout rates in the country, ranking 46th out of 50th in the 2014 statewide elections, which included the race for governor. 33 other states offer some form of expanded voting hours or early voting. The New York State Bar Association's John Nona, testifying before the Assembly Elections Committee hearing, says it's time that New York caught up.
Very difficult to dispute the fact that New York has not kept pace with the rest of the country with respect to the exercise of the right to vote and voting procedures.
He says early voting is popular in the other states, and he expects it would be welcomed by voters in New York. The Bar Association recommends that voting begin 1 week before Election Day. That's a smaller amount of time than in most states that already have early voting. But he says the weekend before Election Day is crucial to allowing working people the time to cast their ballot. He says it would also boost turnout. And the Bar Association recommends registering young people to vote before they are old enough to be eligible by going into high schools and signing up 16 and 17-year-olds.
New Yorkers aged 18 to 24 have actually some of the lowest rate of registration in the state. And the experience in other states and countries indicates that pre-registration of young people before they're 18 will significantly increase voter participation in that younger age group, and we can do it through the schools.
Susan Lerner with the government reform group Common Cause also testified at the hearing. She says New Yorkers with friends and relatives in other states that have early voting can't understand why they can't have the same privileges.
Why can my mother-in-law in Ohio vote at her convenience on a Sunday, and here in New York, where we're supposed to be a forward-thinking state, we have a very limited time in which to vote?
She says in Governor Cuomo's 2013 State of the State message, he called for expanded voting. She says now his administration needs to come up with the funds to carry it out because local governments can't afford to do it on their own.
The governor has a stated position that he is in favor of early voting and modernizing our election system, so he needs to put some resources behind it.
Assembly Democrats have passed a one-house bill to allow early voting in New York, but it's never been approved in the state Senate. Barbara Bartoletti with the League of Women Voters says many politicians believe it's safer for their chances to be reelected under the present system when only a small number of their core supporters come to the polls.
That's what they want, or just their voters. They don't want the general population. They just want their voters to come out, so they don't make it easy for everybody to vote.
New York does offer an opportunity to register to vote at Department of Motor Vehicle offices. Common Cause recommends combining the voter registration form with the driver's license applications, as states including Oregon and California have done. They say that would make it even easier to register to vote. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, a recent article in the New York Times looked at Governor Andrew Cuomo and his move to the left, including raising the minimum wage. This news in the New York Times, Governor Cuomo to order large increase in renewable energy in New York by 2030. Frustrated by the pending shutdown of two nuclear power plants on Lake Ontario, Governor Andrew Cuomo plans to order state regulators to mandate half of power consumed by New Yorkers be generated from renewable sources by 2030.
Interesting, David, because what it shows is that there's a conviction on his part that it can be done. We've all known it can be done. We can do it with our solar panels. We can do it with the big wind turbines. It's doable. We can do it with the waves in the ocean if we're pressed to do it. The problem has been that there's been a lack of will. Now, as far as Cuomo and his political motives, I think his turn to the left, his work that he's been doing lately, is exemplary. I think you're going to see his numbers going up. I think this is a guy who played with sort of a darker side for a while. He's giving that up. He's not taking on the teachers. I'll know he means business when he stops taking gratuitous swipes at the mayor of New York, but he is stabilizing and becoming a more attractive figure to many of the people who ought to be in the Democratic ranks.
Finally, Alan, as New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman fights web fantasy sites like FanDuel and others, arguing that it is gambling, the other side arguing it's skill. This in the Times today. Compulsive gamblers say they have lost thousands of dollars after being drawn by aggressive pitches and promises from fantasy sites for quick payouts.
Well, you know, I've said from the very beginning, if there's money involved, it's gambling. I have received telephone calls from friends of mine who say, leave me alone. I do well with it. I have fun with it. And yet, Schneiderman says he was elected to uphold the law. And he said, the law is you can't gamble. And this is gambling. End of story. I think he's right.
Dueling trials this week for former leaders in the New York State Legislature. Alan, we're speaking of Dean Skelos, the former Senate Majority Leader, and former Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver. Let's start with Sheldon Silver as closing arguments and deliberations this week in that corruption trial with opposite views on whether it was actual corruption or not, and the issue is the theft of honest services law.
Well, let's start at the beginning and say that there are these two trials going on, and that one of the things that the Supreme Court has said in calling the theft of honest services law too vague is that there has to be a quid pro quo shown. And there is the reason why this doctor in the Sheldon Silver trial is very important, because there was an apparent deal. Sheldon Silver says, send me your people who have mesothelioma, and we'll, by law firm, we'll defend them. Please send them to me. And then he got the doctor some grants. But there is no pure smoking gun. There's no moment at which they have anybody on tape saying, if you do this, then I'll do that. You can look at the outcome. And the one thing that Preet Bharara is to be really praised for here is that he took the sewer apart and took the cap off the sewer, and now the stink is absolutely apparent to everybody. So he gets a lot of credit for that. Absolutely don't believe that those people who say if they can prove a quid pro quo, and all you need is one person on the jury who says that, if you can prove a quid pro quo, that Bharara looks bad. Nonsense. Bharara has taken on a system that has been corrupt for a long time and has shown that. Now, as far as the other trial is concerned, which is Dean Skelos, there, I think there is more of a sense of the son using the father's influence and bragging about it and saying, you know, my father's this and that. The father has also put some pressure onto some of these companies by saying, can you help my son out, basically? I think if you take a look at the two trials, it is more likely that Skelos is in trouble than Silver, although I think it depends on what the jury is thinking. If they're saying, this is our chance to show how corrupt and stinking this whole system is, then we convict, each of them will convict the people on trial. But there is this issue, and the laws are written specifically by the very people who are accused of breaking them. There is this issue of having to meet this standard, which is almost impossible.
Will these verdicts have any impact on the current legislature? You've been talking with many folks who say it's still business as usual.
David, you're so right. I'd like to think it would have an effect on the way in which this legislature operates. I have been saying from the very beginning, when people say, well, what about all the good legislators? And I've been saying from the beginning, if those, quote, good legislators don't insist on cleaning things up, then they are in fact part of the problem. And I would hate to say it, but bad legislators.
And finally, Alan, in a country now where the issue of law enforcement's interaction, especially with minorities, comes this story, most New Yorkers and folks around the country know it. The Court of Appeals has rejected efforts to make public the testimony heard by the Staten Island grand jury in the death of Eric Garner, the chokehold case.
Well, you know, there are many people who want to know what evidence was brought before that grand jury. And these grand juries are one-sided. The prosecution basically controls the way that things work. And lawyers for the accused are often allowed in the room, but they're not allowed to say anything. It's not a trial. And there are many people who think that the grand jury process has been abused. As the disgraced Saul Wachtler, the former chief judge, once said, a prosecutor could indict a ham sandwich. Well, we all know this is one of the most famous quotes in all of modern jurisprudence. But grand juries can get a lot of information by people who are testifying, and the courts have said we're going to protect the way in which that information gets out to the public. I myself would think that if you're going to have a grand jury and it's going to take testimony, that it's perfectly acceptable to let people know what happened. But there will be those who say, hey, since it is a one-sided process, it's really not a fair thing to open up to public scrutiny.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand and Congressman Paul Tonko were in Albany recently to push legislation the two New York Democrats say addresses a skills gap and enhances job training. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas explains.
In September, U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand and three colleagues announced an updated Apprenticeship and Jobs Training Act. They say the bill would help the next generation of American workers develop skills to secure well-paying, high-demand jobs. The update of the April measure came after President Obama announced his administration is putting $175 million toward apprenticeship programs across the country. Last Friday, Gillibrand, along with Congressman Paul Tonko, State Senator Neil Breslin, and Assemblywoman Pat Fahey, toured MCD Metals LLC at Albany's Corporate Circle in an effort to push the bill.
Many communities across our state, including the Capital Region, are still trying hard to rebuild from the recession and trying to make sure our economy is competitive for the 21st century.
The bipartisan bill would create a $5,000 credit for employers that use apprenticeship programs in professions including healthcare, manufacturing, and technology. Tonko says there is a vibrancy to the manufacturing sector.
It is a changed area of activity. It is cutting edge. And for us to be able to compete in a global marketplace, we need to have investments made across all the infrastructure, from capital to physical to human infrastructure. The worker training is essential.
Jeff Stark is president of the Greater Capital Region Building and Construction Trades Council, which has its own apprenticeship program.
This type of bill is very important to manufacturing, but also our multi-employer plans, because this will hopefully position people in manufacturing for our future. And it's no secret that there's been a big loss in manufacturing, and it is on the comeback. And these are the kind of tax credits that we can use to be built in America again. And not only just union, but, you know, made in America.
Gillibrand says the legislation will help the U.S. to remain competitive with an innovative workforce.
90% of men and women who have completed an apprenticeship program are employed. 90%. The men and women who complete an apprenticeship program have an average starting salary of more than $50,000 a year. And this is where we see the long-term benefits of the program. On average, the men and women who complete an apprenticeship earn $300,000 more over their lifetime than someone who didn't have the benefit of an apprenticeship program.
Gillibrand's figures are bolstered by a Department of Labor study that found workers who complete apprenticeships earn an average of $240,000 more in wages over a lifetime than job seekers with similar work experience. Stark credits the Cuomo administration with helping the manufacturing resurgence in New York.
That's good for the economy. It's good for union jobs. It's good for non-union jobs. It's good for workers. And that's what we need, is good paying manufacturing jobs, because that was always the base of America. Not sector jobs, service jobs, but manufacturing was our base in America. And that's what made America great, our great manufacturing sector.
The measure would also allow veterans in apprenticeships to receive credit for previous military training and experience, as well as incentivize the mentoring of apprentices by senior employees.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
There are plenty of issues for the New York State Legislature to tackle when it returns to Albany for the new session in January. Republican State Senator Betty Little represents the 45th District, which stretches north from Queensbury to the Canadian border and west from the Vermont border into St. Lawrence County. While in Plattsburgh, Senator Little discussed a number of issues with the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley, including Senate Majority Leader John Flanagan's decision not to hold the special session to act on a chief judge.
The timeline is set, but they really haven't adhered to that timeline in a number of years, and there is some room there. So I think what will happen is we will go back in January, and then the Judiciary Committee will meet and they interview, you know, the nominee, and then we will vote on it in committee. I'm not on the Judiciary anymore, but then it will go to the full floor.
Do we have any disadvantage in not having a special election?
No, there is the second judge who acts as the chief judge of the appellate division when once Judge Lipman is retired, he will take that place. And they don't actually even have a calendar in January, so I think it's not any huge impact by waiting.
I know it's over in the Assembly, but Speaker Hastie has said that he wouldn't necessarily see a ban on outside income for members. Do you think that the legislature in general should have a vote on outside income for legislators?
Well, I think we have a committee or commission, as we have numerous commissions, but looking into the ethics and all of that. You know, we are a citizen legislature, and I really think that we benefit by coming from different professions and continuing to practice those professions. I think that the big thing is disclosure, and the instances that we've seen that have been a problem have come when they did not disclose where their outside income was coming from. Certainly, disclosure is the number one factor.
The biggest news in the North Country region this year has been the escape from Dana Mora. Are you planning any legislation in the aftermath?
Well, Senator Marchione put out some legislation that would increase the penalties for anyone who helps an escape from a prison facility. That's necessary. I mean, I've met with District Attorney Wiley, and really that was all he could do. And it's unfortunate because this woman caused a huge, huge amount of distress and expense in New York State. I think that the penalty needs to be stronger.
Betty Little, obviously this is a border district.
Mm-hmm.
What's being done to allay any fears regarding the Syrian refugee situation and people saying that, you know, we need to watch our borders more closely because some of the terrorists in Paris filtered in with Syrian refugees, et cetera?
This is a really, really serious thing, and it's very personal to me in that my son just deployed on the Harry Truman carrier. And he'll be gone for 7 months, and he is going to the Mideast on the carrier. As far as, you know, helping people who are in need, that's what this country is about. But we really have to be very careful to make sure that we are screening, that we have people that are coming here, especially right now if they're coming from Syria, where ISIS is so infiltrated with the community and everything else that that we don't have some of those coming here who want to harm us. But we have a lot of security in our country, and we really need to up it somewhat to make sure that we aren't getting people who are coming here with that idea to harm Americans and to frighten us as well.
Do you agree with some of the governors across the country that say we should prevent Syrian refugees from coming into the states?
I think we need to look at that, yes. You know, we have plenty of refugee centers, and we help people from all over the world coming here. And we still have many, many people who would like to come here legitimately and are on long waiting lists. So we have to be careful with what we're doing, and we cannot take a flood in at once, especially people that we don't have the ability to screen them well enough to make sure that we are not getting somebody who is out to harm us.
What's your first priority when you go back into session in January?
Well, I think what we need to be looking at is job development and help for small business, some tax breaks for small business, and they don't seem to get much help. You know, 2 years ago, we eliminated the manufacturing tax, which is very helpful. But for the small businesses out there, we don't give them a lot of anything, and we need to work at that.
That was 45th District Republican Betty Little. Lawmakers are due back in Albany in early January. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Residents of Amsterdam, New York, are pooling their ideas to decide how to shape the final look of the city's pedestrian bridge that spans the Mohawk River. Pedestrian bridges are common in many of the cities across New York. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard has more.
Inside Amsterdam City Hall, members of the community gathered to hear a presentation from City Director of Community and Economic Development, Robert Van Hasseln, about the Mohawk Valley Gateway Overlook Bridge. In the second such meeting, Van Hasseln explained that the city has $650,000 in state grants. He handed out a list of ideas compiled from the last brainstorming session that included amenities such as bicycle racks, a farmer's market, numerous suggestions for special events, and a visitor center.
So now what we're doing, and I'm very happy, is we're asking the public, the people of Amsterdam, what do you think will help your city the most? What will bring in the most people? What will bring in the most revenue?
He took suggestions for improved security, added restrooms, and increased accessibility to the bridge and neighboring Riverlink Park. Michelson Quanti suggested incorporating a New York State Walk of Fame that would feature plaques depicting important people from each county.
I'm like everyone else, most people in the city. I really want that bridge to be a success, and I'm hoping it's going to be a success with the existing concept. But I think we need to enhance the concept in order to assure its success, and I think something that will attract people from outside the area. I mean, a lot of people are interested in Amsterdam, but a lot more people are interested in New York State, you know, so that's my whole thought.
The bridge that connects the downtown with the city's south side has been in development for years. Amsterdam Mayor Anne Thain sat in on the meeting. The outgoing Democrat said she was pleased with the turnout and ideas offered Wednesday night.
It makes me very optimistic for the future of the bridge because I think that there are very rich ideas out there and diverse ideas, and the more input that we get from the constituency, the better the final product will be.
Van Hasseln said the city is doing what it can to gather as many diverse ideas as possible before determining the best fits for the bridge.
In this stage, you don't want to cut anybody off, and you don't want to say, no, that's a bad idea, or debate the merits, or get stuck in the mud. You want to keep the creativity going. Then you sit down and do the hard work of saying, well, is that really feasible? Is that most important? Is that something that we could probably get funded some other way? And winnow down your list until you come down with, this is the best combination of things that'll give us the most bang for the buck.
The next public meeting on the Mohawk Valley Gateway Overlook is scheduled for December 17th.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
That about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1548, or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time. For more news on New York State government and politics, for the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.